Hey, it's Coach Kate here, registered dietitian and owner of RD Kate Sports Nutrition. As a member of the LCC Stars Athletic Department, I teach our athletes what to eat and when to eat it on training days, competition days, and throughout the year. For over a decade, I've been helping athletes of all sports and levels meet their goals. RD Kate Sports Nutrition offers individual consulting, team services, on-demand courses, and downloadable handouts. For more information, visit rdkate.com.
Welcome back, and thank you to all of our listeners for making this show so popular. In the studio today, I have our hitting coach and co-host, Elijah Boyer, and we will be going over questions that have been sent in by our listeners over the last few weeks. If you have a question for us, make sure you reach out.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Coach Cuts Corner. Streaming bright from Michigan's capital city, this podcast is dedicated to helping you better understand the who, the what, and the why of mental performance, personal growth, and Lansing Stars baseball. Coach Cuts Corner, brought to you by Eyewash.
In collaboration with Lansing Community College.
And now here's your host, Stephen Cutter.
All right, here we go. Back in the WLNZ studios. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing pretty special. All right. Excited to unwrap some of these questions. I know we've got quite a few. We won't be able to hit on all of them that we've gotten in, but certainly we'll try to get through, you know, quite a bit of them today. First one, this is definitely for you. So why is bat speed important in a hitter? And then it goes in to ask a second question. So I kind of want you to hit on the first one. But the second question is, are there cheaper ways to make heavier and lighter bats? And so if you want to just kind of touch on why you think bat speed's important, I know I can certainly hit on it too, but I'll lean it to you.
Yeah. Bat speed, for a simple way to go about it, is like the foundation of a swing in my mind. That's how I look at it and have been taught. Allows for... The most playable metric for a hitter is how hard they can hit the ball. And we're going to assume that at whatever level you're at, that your players can hit the ball. Because obviously, if they just swing and miss, it's no good. But the biggest correlator to on-field success is exit velocity, and that's directly affected by bat speed. So for every mile an hour of bat speed that they gain, they can hit the ball 1.2 miles an hour harder and go 4 to 7 feet further. Okay. So when you don't have... the bat speed needed for whatever level that you're at, you're at a disadvantage, because even when you do strike the ball as good as you possibly can, you're not going to do as much damage as if you were swinging the bat faster. So foundation for kind of success in the hitter is the way I look at it. Obviously, it doesn't tell the whole story, but if you made contact every time and it's just going over the shortstop, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really good answer, and I know where that comes from, because I know we were talking about, you know, blast sensors at one point and, you know, measuring cheaper ways to be able to measure that kind of stuff, and so I understand where that comes from. And I think at the youth level and at the high school level and even at the college level, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. And when you're talking about hitting, there's obviously the eye piece, the bat-to-ball piece, but if you're going to make contact, you want to be able to make the best contact possible, also called quality contact. And if you're going to do that, you want to have the most speed that you possibly can. And bat speed's just like a muscle, you know, I mean, if you train it, it will get better. You just got to know where you're starting at. And so the second piece to it is, I think we must have talked about our axe bats or our underloads and overloads, but is there a cheaper way to make overload bats, in your opinion?
For sure. And I think people have been doing it for a long time.
Right.
I don't think. And maybe sometimes it was not knowing, but just the weighted bats, the axe ones specifically, or, you know, drive lines bats now, since they're making them on their own, they're just weighted at the handle and then at the end of the bat. So a barrel load. And it's just 6 ounces heavier if you're swinging a 33 ounce bat. So you just get about $10 worth of quarters and some duct tape and roll it on the end of the bat. And, you know, you got some cruddy old bat that you probably weren't going to use anyway. So you just made a weighted bat for potentially like under $20.
Yeah. If you want to get better, find a way.
Yeah. There's no doubt there's a way. And on that podcast we did where we broke down the, I don't think it came out yet, but it was like how much stuff you could get for just $1,000 if you went about it in a cost efficient way. You'd have multiple sets of weighted bats for your team.
Yeah, that's good. What do you got?
First one here, it was like, I'm going to put in air quotes, is, do you believe that sometimes coaches lose the game or management lost that game? And what are kind of some effective coaching strategies for game time decisions, like on who to put in and why, like hit, whether it be hitter or pitcher?
Okay. There's a lot to that question. I'll make it kind of easy. My basis of thinking is typically, and I've learned this from really some special elite operational teams that I've viewed, and they really believe at those high levels, there are no such thing as bad teams, just bad leaders. And they've proven that in the military by switching boat crews that have struggled in different events and things like that. So I believe, yeah, being a really good leader is very important. And before you can make strategies, you have to be calm and cool and collected, because in those moments, there's a lot going on. And in our game of baseball, there's a ton of failure. And so if you're living and dying on every pitch or every strikeout or every error, the team can see that. The players can see it. And what it does is typically it makes the team a little bit tighter. You know, I knew, you know, growing up, I played for some different coaches that were like that in different sports. And, you know, you got a little bit tighter. So before you can make really good decisions, you got to have a pretty calm heart rate, you know, in the game. That's can be pretty challenging. We work with our players a lot of times on that. And then when you're making decisions, I think you're making those decisions not necessarily in the moment, but based off of what they've done in practice, what they've done outside of the field, you know, what they've done for the program. You're making those decisions at that point. In our program, we do use a lot of data, and we're trying to make the best matchups that we can and make sure our pitchers are a little bit different and our hitters are, you know, in their best strengths to be able to have success. So yeah, that's definitely a good question.
Yeah. And one part I was thinking is, obviously I love the data. It's like my foundation as a coach. But I was thinking, man, in those moments, those big moments, you know, you think about, like, you know, bottom of the ninth type thing, you know, it's like, what guy do you want out there? And sometimes it's not the data part.
Yeah.
You know, it's knowing the guy that's going to handle that, because you care about your guys and you talk to them and you understand their personality types and like how they're going to respond. You know what I mean?
For sure. And in those big moments, which a lot of times you don't get into those big moments enough or very often, and you certainly don't have them in your practice environment, no matter how much you try to train game, like, you know, stuff, you still don't have it. But in those big moments, you'll actually see things just slow down a little bit if you're doing it right, and things will become pretty calm. And that when you're in that situation, you know that's a good spot. And if you're an athlete and you're in that situation, you're given your best chance to have success. You're giving yourself your best chance to have success. It's a really, really good spot to be.
Yeah.
Next question. When doing front toss or flips to a hitter, should you be standing up or sitting down, overhand or underhand?
Ask the hitter how he wants to warm up. Every hitter is different, man. There's major league guys that do drills that are completely eyewash, and they're some of the best hitters in the game. That's my opinion. I couldn't care less how a guy wants to warm up, whatever he likes. If you're asking my preference, obviously outside of warming up, you don't want to just flip to a guy all the time. It's not ideal.
Why?
It's just a different angle. If you're having really loopy flips, you know, it's not realistic to the
just
incoming angle.
Matching
of a pitch.
Planes in general. Yeah. And I, some of this question I get a little bit, because, you know, the overhand underhand does play in. If you're overhand throwing and you've got the L screen 8 feet away from the hitter, well, that they'll never see a plane of a ball coming in like that ever, you know? So some of that's really dependent on where your L screen's at and stuff like that.
100%.
You know, if you need to throw overhand, that's where the sitting down from those distances is way better, because that matches the plane of a ball coming in. Now, what you hit on is really good because, you know, depending on what you're looking for, are you warming up? You know, might not matter. It's what, you know, helps you get loose and feel good.
Yeah.
But are you training? If you're training, then you got to kind of come in and if that's a piece, if the flips are a part of your piece, then you've got to kind of match that to what they're actually going to see in the game or what they're going to see from a pitcher. Otherwise, the value is just not there. And you hit on it. You can actually throw some loops if you want to work on some off-speed spin of a curveball or something like that. Mm-hmm. But if that's all you're seeing, then you're going to get in the game and you're going to be blown away with, you know, fastballs just because there isn't a loop to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think this one could go even a little longer than probably intended, but I remember another thing that I was taught and was like, so if a guy has a really steep, you know, swing, right? Yep. He's swinging really down at the ball, flip him.
Killing worms.
Yeah. He's pounding the ball on the ground. Flip him a real loopy, like flip really loopy. And then he's going to have to match that plane and you don't even, you don't have to do anything there. If you have a guy that's swinging really under it, you know, throw a little firmer, throw it higher up in the zone, you know, it's totally dependent on the hitter. But if you were in a scenario where the question's kind of more geared towards like, what is the best way, I guess, if there was one, it would be the closest to game like that you can get. And like we do with the, when we measure out our distances for how far away we are and how hard we're throwing so that we know it's not just absurd. Like I told a hitter this yesterday or the other day, I said, if there is ever an environment you're in and you feel like you're wasting your time, I was like, you come and get me immediately. Because that means someone didn't set the machine up right. You're too close. It's too fast.
Something's wrong.
Something's not right.
Even with flips, you know, I've discovered over a period of time that you can have challenging flips too. And so if flips are part of your station and you're always doing the same thing, you can change those up. They can be a little bit firmer. They can be softer, what I will call a change-up flip. You know, you can make them more challenging. Yeah. And, you know, the game's extremely challenging. What do you got?
Coaching pet peeves. Do you have any?
I don't think so. At least none that are necessarily coming immediately to mind. I feel like some of my pet peeves are just in baseball in general and constantly asking why. Why are we doing this? I think we may have gotten into it at some point, but I don't know if I've swayed your thoughts, but I made you think more about why baseball coaches wear baseball uniforms and basketball coaches don't wear basketball uniforms and football coaches don't wear football uniforms.
That could kind of be a pet peeve right there.
And so that's definitely a little bit of it. And Little League Baseball, you can't wear a uniform. They don't let the coaches wear the uniform. So, I mean, try to go figure all that out.
Yeah.
So.
And I think this was a question, the way it's worded, I was thinking about it. It could be viewed from a couple different ways. Like, what are your pet peeves as a coach that players do? What are your pet peeves that other coaches do? Or what are your pet peeves in general, like on the game? So mine is when I was playing, this happened as well, is when a coach would tell me something in my very first round of the day about my swing.
Right.
I was like,
that's good.
And like, you're late. Like, I know. I'm trying to get loose, man. It's my first round of the day. It's my first time seeing a ball moving. And, you know, you're talking to me about mechanical stuff, and I hate that so much. So I like to let guys get warm, do their thing. There just needs to be some more feel to it. So that was a big pet peeve of mine.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, I can't say really have any with other coaches or anything else. I'm super focused on us and our staff and stuff like that. So nothing really bothers me too much there with players. Not so much. I mean, we're looking for guys to show up every day and do their job and have fun doing it, you know, and if they're not doing their job or they're not having fun doing it, then something's wrong and we got to figure out why. And so it's not so much a pet peeve. If that's consistent and that's happening every day with our players, then we've got to do something different, and it's not going to be a pet peeve. It's going to be something that we're going to handle, but definitely a...
Or the palms up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I could be a basketball coach. We were talking about that the other day.
Right.
Players, palms up in everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you see the officials doing it now too. So.
It's like, what are we palms up in?
We could digress deeply into that, how much differently officials are treated in basketball than they are in baseball.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If you treated them, I'm talking player wise or coach wise, if you did that in baseball, you would get run like right away.
See ya.
Okay. Oh, this is a good one. How important is strength for baseball players, in your opinion?
Strength is...
And this came from a high school coach here in Michigan, and so let's try to relay it to the high school level.
Okay. Through the books I've read and the people I've been around, I kind of just came up with this in my head now, and I love it. Strength is only as important as you can get it to translate it to the field. So, like, it's very important, you know, but if you guys are just going in and, like, in bench pressing, you know, 3 times a week doing 5x5s and your team isn't mobile at all, they don't move well, they're really stiff, you know.
So you're saying
players aren't getting better in metrics that matter.
So you're saying, like, Rocky wouldn't have been a good baseball player, you don't think?
Yeah, I don't think he would have been great. And
I think he would have been pretty gritty, though.
Yeah, he would have been gritty. I mean, I'm a prime example. I lifted super hard, and I was very strong, but zero mobility, rarely did, like, functional movements. Mm-hmm. That translated to baseball. I'd say more than half of my career, that was because I didn't know better. And then the second half was when the majority of what you're doing isn't in line, you know, like when you're lifting 3 days a week with your team and it is what it is, you can't change it. It's like, it's weird to go lift again and then lift the right way. I don't know. There's excuses, I guess, in there too, but
I think strength's really important from the pitching side. Kids are throwing harder today. And I think, you know, it's not always, you know, about how they're moving, even though moving is super important. I think you definitely see that lack of strength in kids, and their bodies just can't handle the force that it's able to put out. And so strength training is very important. And it's also a little more challenging at the high school level because a lot of times the kids are playing multiple sports. And so they're having all these different forces put on their body. And so the strength training, they might be going in 5 days a week, but they're not getting very much out of it because they're in basketball season right now and they're running a lot and they're going to work out right after they get done with practice or something like that, you know? So there's a lot that goes into it, but the easy answer to that question is strength training is extremely important for athletes, and it's also important for everybody else. So.
Yeah, it's very important. I mean, overall, yes, it's very important. And I think there's just, as you climb up in levels, I think each guy that just gets more individualized. Yeah. So, the one I got here is, how do you get guys to compete like they would? Like, if you ever seen, this is how I interpret this question. If you ever seen baseball players play like basketball together or go play dodgeball, you know, or anything like that, or 7-on-7 football, like, how do you get them to compete like that in a baseball game? They think that same type of...
Somewhat not that hard. If they're playing dodgeball for the first time, they're going to compete really hard. But if you play dodgeball every day, pretty soon, a week in, they're not competing that hard because it's not new. If we went and played basketball instead of baseball practice, our team would be extremely fired up. We've got a lot of guys that think they can hoop. I said think, not that can.
Yeah.
And they'd be fired up. But if we started doing that, you know, multiple times a week, the excitement levels would come down. And so the competition piece is what I believe is not something that you're born with. It's something that is kind of cultivated through processes. And for kids at the high school and college levels, more specifically the college level, but even the high school level, because we would do it, is getting them to understand their why. Why is this important? Why am I doing this? Why am I coming to practice today? Why am I going to try to give 100% in this game, even though I'm not going to play? Yeah. You know, and getting them to define their whys and figure out what their whys are. And, you know, this could be a whole nother discussion, but it's very, very important for me, it's very important for you. It's very important for anybody else to understand what their why is and why are they doing things? And, you know, why do they want to be a really good parent, or why do they want to be a really good coach, or, you know, why do they want to be a great teammate or a good player? You know, why? And if you can get them, help them kind of navigate that really bumpy of a road of figuring that out, once it's figured out, that's how you get them to compete every day. Versus, you know, throwing it out there, like you said, with a question where you know, maybe playing something else like dodgeball or basketball, you know, where it's new. So,
yeah. And I think there's a little piece to it where they shut off everything that has to do with like overthinking. Like there is no other thing, you know. And I think it's because you know, you care less about a pickup game of basketball. You care less about dodgeball, you know. But when you're going out there and you're playing a game and you know there's something on the line and it's what you work all year for, I think, you know, very undisciplined teams that haven't been through the mental stuff, can, it's easy to let it control you in a negative way and think too much. So,
all right, one of the last ones. I'm a young coach. I want to get better. What do you recommend?
Young coach wanting to get better. Tons of free places to learn stuff. But before I dive into that one, I would say just start. Yeah, just start.
Don't let the start stop
you. Yeah, man, I was going to say that. That was stuck in my head. Every time I hear Kane say that, it sticks in my head really, really. I don't know why, but don't let the start stop you. Even me, I'll just take myself for this young coach for this question. I had one kid reach out to me about 2 years ago now, 2.5, and he just wanted to hit. And, you know, I was working 12-hour shifts, and I was like, I could say I don't have time or I could just do it. And so I just started, and then I found out that that kid really cares, and then that made me find my why a little more. And then just because I started and just said, I'll go hit, then I was like, okay, I got to figure out a way to make this kid the best I can. And so I started researching, and that's where you go to websites like Driveline, or there's a whole bunch of websites out there with free information, blogs.
Got to be careful where you're getting your information from, but
yeah. But then again, like, don't even let that stop you. Just start, and you're gonna make mistakes. Just accept that. you're gonna tell a kid a bad drill. You're gonna tell a kid something that's wrong. Don't let that stop you. And then you'll learn as you go, and you'll find more resources the more you look. And then you'll run into books, and then you'll run into conferences, and then you'll run into great people that help you along the way and guide you. Right. And so it all starts with starting somewhere, man. Like, I bought my blast sensor, didn't even know how to use it, and I was using it wrong with that kid. But I just wanted to start somewhere, and I knew I needed some type of metrics behind me. So,
yeah, I think just the willingness to learn, and that's part of a growth mindset, but just the willingness to want to learn. And then once you start learning, you continue learning, and that continues through your whole life. And I think, you know, it's been said, the more you know, the more you realize how little you know, you know, and it's just a continuous process. I know for us in our program, we're always open to high school or travel ball coaches coming into our practices, asking questions, watching what we're doing. That's, you know, awesome. we're super open to that. And we had quite a few last year, and I'm sure as we're rolling into our season, we'll have quite a few again this year. And that really shows you, like, they're interested in learning, and they want to see what's happening. And that is by far the best way that you can do is start asking questions, seeing if you can watch practices, seeing, you know, what else is out there. I know when I started my journey into coaching, that's kind of what I did. And I traveled to some pretty cool places. And I also traveled to the places that hadn't won hardly any games, but got to see it all. And I think, you know, in reality, the point is I've coached countless hours at this point, day in and day out. And there's always kind of been continuous trial and error. And I can assure you, I was not very good when I started. And I've got a long, long, long way to go to keep getting better. But there are a few things in this world, and I know this to be true, that you can become excellent at without time and effort. And so that kind of circles back to that question or anything else. If you're willing to, you want to do something, you've got to put the time and you've got to put the effort in. And I think we share a lot of ways, not only on this podcast, but in our circles, of how you do that, because there's some tough days that come up, and there's some times where you just don't feel like it, or I don't want to, or I don't feel like it, you know, those kind of things. And how you get by those things is really the difference makers. And that's where we say, you know, consistency is a superpower. Yeah. So Once again, I appreciate all the questions that have come in. We'll definitely try to hit on some of our podcasts, these questions that are coming in. Keep questioning stuff. And if you have interest in learning more, please reach out so you can come visit one of our practices. And once again, thank you to all of our listeners. And thanks you to Coach Boyer for joining me in the WLNZ studios. Stay humble, stay hungry, go Stars.
Coach Cut's Corner is recorded live in the WLNZ studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalian Lowry. Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it and follow us on all the platforms of social media. You can find more about our program at lccstars.com, and donations to our baseball program can be made at the same site. See you next time. Oh.